You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1819, the great British Romantic poet John Keats wrote, "Beauty is truth, truth beauty." In the foreword to Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems Now, contemporary poet Amit Majumdar writes that Keats's definition of truth never sounded dangerous to him until now, in today's world of fake news and alternative facts. Dr. Majumdar is Ohio's poet laureate and one of 50 award-winning writers whose work is included in Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems Now, a new collection of works published by Knopf that were written in response to the 2016 presidential election and the current political climate. He joins us now along with Carol Muskie Dukes, a novelist professor at the University of Southern California and a former poet laureate of California, and Andrea Cohen, poet and director of the Writer's House at Merrimack College and the Blacksmith House Poetry Series in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm very pleased it has brought them to our show now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on.
I mean, you begin the foreword by quoting Pontius Pilate and asking, what is truth? Hasn't truth always been an important concern, especially in regard to politicians?
You know, absolutely. And I think that today we've become hyper-conscious of it because maybe not for the first time, but in a very visible way, it's become something that's weaponized. Falsehood, turning the truth around on itself and using it to accomplish something political hasn't necessarily been that strong a feature. But I think historically, that's part of the nature of politics, is people disagreeing over truth.
Why does Keats' definition of truth, beauty, is truth, truth, beauty, sound dangerous to you now?
Well, because if you think about it, you can suddenly plug the term truth into proverbs that traditionally apply to beauty. So just as beauty is in the eye of the beholder, suddenly truth is in the eye of the beholder as well. And that's where the danger comes in.
So the big question, and I throw this out to all of you, is what is truth? Carol?
Well, I was in to sort of piggyback on what Amit was saying in his introduction. I think he says something like, in paraphrasing, that what Trump says, to pick on our president yet again, what Trump says is sort of the opposite of what poets convey. In other words, language is the issue here, as he said. The misuse of language by the president stands as a kind of the opposite end of an equation, and the other end is poetry, which I agree doesn't always reflect what's true, but makes an attempt to get close to an accuracy in language that is beautiful.
Andrea, you want to add to that, or
sure.
Should I ask you a different question?
No, sure. One of the things that comes to mind for me is something that John Cheever said when he was talking about his short stories, which was, "I lie in order to tell the truth."
Right.
Of course, we're not claiming to be telling a literal truth in our poetry or in our stories, and I think that we're looking for an essence of the truth.
Some people feel that you should try to keep politics out of art. Is that possible?
I don't think it's possible.
I don't think we tend to categorize experience in, I guess everyone does, but in our country in particular, I don't think politics should be set aside as an off subject, something that we can't address. And I thought it was Picasso who said we lie in order to tell the truth. I'm sorry, Andrea, but it's the same idea, right? At least poets, they were thrown out of Plato's Republic because they were supposedly, liars. They were inventors. But I think that, within a political climate, they can address politics in a way that is more accurate, oddly, an attempt to actually reveal the larger truth, as Andrea is saying, that is more effective than
and
more people.
And I agree, and also historically, if you look at it, politics has been intrinsic to some of the most canonical and revered works in the literary tradition. So look at Dante. Has all these high mystical, expositions of theology, but he will flip within a canto and start talking about politics, contemporary politics of his day.
Well, there have been some conservative American poets in the past, like T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound, but Amit, you write that you invited contributors to Resistance to write poems of any political leaning, including ones to support the current president and his policies. Did you get any pro-Trump poems?
No. You know, the title of the book is Resistance, Rebellion, Life. And it's important to remember, I'm from Ohio. Ohio was actually went to Trump. You know, the right, the far right included, they cast themselves and think of themselves as a resistance. They're resisting the elites. They're resisting globalization. They're resisting demographic changes in the country. But I think that poets, at least judging from the submissions I got, are basically 100% cast themselves in the other resistance, as it were, the resistance that we are referring to.
So why do you think there aren't conservative poets as they used to be? Like, I mean, Ezra Pound, actually,
right.
He supported Mussolini.
Right. And there are several factors that play into that. And some of them, I think, the proximal historical factors in the United States specifically, have to do with the fact that page poets frequently come through universities, large cities. And, you know, these areas tend to be liberal. Campuses tend to be liberal, which is part of it. I think another aspect of it is that, you know, relative to Trump specifically and the form that Trump's conservatism has taken specifically in our time, that, you know, Trump just tells a story about America that just does not mesh with the experience of
poets. But you write that you dislike political poetry and protest poetry for much of your reading life. So you've changed.
I've absolutely changed. And it wasn't necessarily this moment that changed. I think for me it was 9/11. It just made me far more aware of where I was, because I kind of grew up during the at a time when people were talking about, quote, the end of history, you know? So I felt like politics and everything like that was really something that I could just kind of ignore. The Soviet Union was gone and, you know, things were looking up. And I think when 9/11 happened, I was, you know, I was kind of brought back into the world, as it were.
I'm going to ask each of you to read a poem. You want to read yours first, Amit?
Sure.
Swearing the Truth?
Sure.
And Swearing the Oath.
Swearing the Oath. And it kind of relates to what Andrea and Carol were talking about lying to tell the truth. So this poem is actually based on a, quote, fake fact. It's a fake fact of my mother being naturalized in 2016. Really, she was naturalized like 20 years ago. But this is called Swearing the Oath. Naturalized in 2016. My mom watched natural-born citizens show her the nature of America. This is not America, I said. This nation of lies. This is a monster of nature spending 2016 making monsters of citizens. She and I watched together till I couldn't watch. So this was America. So these were her citizens. How strange to be naturalized in 2016, the year our nature warred with our other nature. And all we could do was watch reality show us in 2016 an unreal America. My mom never felt more unnaturalized than in the year she became a citizen. Good thing she became a citizen. What with a monster of nature's narrow, unnatural eyes, impossible not to watch, leveled, mesmeric, at America in the year of our Lord 2016. In the year of our liar 2016, my mom became a citizen of a strange America. Improbability, too, is a force of nature. We couldn't not watch. Unnatural untruths became natural lies. In 2016, my mom became a naturalized citizen just in time to watch America denature.
Amit Majmudar, who are reading his poem called Swearing the Oath. He is the editor also of a collection called Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems, now from Knopp. Also with us is Carol Muskeduk. And Carol, you submitted a poem to this collection called Some Say.
Yes.
Do you mind reading it for us?
I would love to read it. It's, as you said, called Some Say. Some say it's high noon in a big hat, shooting up the saloon. America? Some say it's your Second Amendment. Those stockpiles of ammo bought at a chain. Say the next door kid living in screen games, exploding heads, walking dead, or it's gangs in torched neighborhoods, drugs running in the brain, or a bead drawn on a clinic doctor, women in line next to a homeless vet begging. Some say it's armed revolt, racist cops, bragging hunters, looter tools, mass crave rave for oblivion, rapture addicts. Here comes one more drive-by, school invasion, nightclub terror, bully, bullied, lynch mob, God cult, toddler aside. Oh, America, shooting from the hip, from the last of the trees in a national park, your militia surrounded by SWAT. Say you're an upstanding patriot in an invented war, defending unborn lobbyists, a double-sided coin minted by the National Reprisal Association of the Craven Congressionals, saying it to history's final judge. You, great God gun, in whom some trust, in bunker mind, underground condos. Oh, say it in Homeric chanted dactyls. I sing of arms and the punk, self-pumped-up lovers of the silencer. Dickinson wrote it first, living God of gun. You are without the power to die.
Was that inspired by any particular event? What got you thinking about writing a poem about the Second Amendment?
Well, it's not, I don't think so much about the Second Amendment, but what I was trying to say before about accuracy is a poet writes, you know, what is accurate to one's own experience. I guess I tried to say it in the poem, which is that all these, you know, all these deaths by gun add up to this sense of, you know, a god, that this is a deity. And as Emily Dickinson did say, a gun has no power to die. That's haunted me, you know, as each one of these horrific events takes place without some sort of gun control in this country.
Andrew Cohen, your poem is called After the End.
Yes.
Would you read it for us now?
Sure. After the End. Listen. There were other ends, other reckonings. There were other one-size boots, one kick fits all. There were other dark days no night could mirror. Hear me out, if someone above the rubble can.
That has a kind of an apocalyptic sense to it.
I was feeling sort of apocalyptic. I wrote that at 6 a.m. the morning after the election, and I had gone to sleep thinking about rubble. And as I was just telling Amit, a poem that was also in my head is a poem by the great Polish poet Tadeusz Różewicz, In the Middle of Life, and that begins, after the end of the world, after my death, I found myself in the middle of life.
Amit, you're also a diagnostic nuclear radiologist?
Yes, sir.
What can poetry accomplish in terms of protests that other literary forms, essays, short stories, journalism, etc., cannot?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm sure everyone probably has different opinions on that. I would say that what poetry can do is it can hybridize the timely and the timeless, perhaps in a way that journalism can't. Because what we do is not simply document. We don't simply document. We don't simply tell a story. We're also, basically, every time you write a poem, you're inserting it into the tradition of poetry and all the poems that have ever been written. And because it is art, it requires some element of timeliness and timelessness, which gives it a higher degree of longevity and hopefully a higher degree of human truth.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear what Andrea and Carol think about it.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that one of the things that that I'm trying to do in my poems and that inspires me about a lot of the poetry, particularly that comes out of post-war, World War II Polish poetry, is that sort of having to recreate a world after what felt like an apocalypse.
And, Carol, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, just briefly, I agree, obviously. I think to all of literature, all of poetry is a conversation. You know, we talk to the dead. We listen to the dead. We have mentioned here the living poets do, and we've mentioned here several names of poets who have inspired us or influenced what we've had to say. You know, from Dante to the post-war Polish poets, and, you know, I had vaguely in my mind, I guess as I wrote my poem, both Sappho, who has a, there's a poem of Sappho's, a partial fragment called Some Say, and that was in my mind, as well as of Ginsberg's Howl, you know, one of the great poems that laid bare a different America. You know, so I think it is a conversation that we have in poetry, which gives it this timeless element.
And my great thanks to the three of you for being on our show. Amit Majumdar, Carol Muskie-Dukes, and Andrea Cohen. We're talking about a book called Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems Now, published by Knopf. And Amit Majumdar and many of the contributors to Resistance, Rebellion, Life, at least the ones who are in the New York area, sorry, Carol, will be appearing tonight at 7 o'clock at NYU's Tishman Auditorium. That's at 40 Washington Square South between McDougal and Sullivan Streets. And I'm sure you're expecting a big crowd.
I think it's going to be a pretty good crowd. Yeah. And it's I know for a fact that it's going to be a great crowd of poets. So
thank you all.